Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. I have with me today Denise Payne Olivier, and I met her through a series of connections through Reiki Masters and so on. And I'm just very grateful that she consented to be on the show, because one of the themes that I have had over the last couple of years has been the application of Reiki treatments in post-traumatic stress disorder, and then especially with people who have been in the armed forces. And if you look back a couple of years ago, you'll find two or three shows about post-traumatic stress disorder and in the application of veterans and veterans of the different military conflicts that we have going on in the world today. So, Denise, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a blessing to be here. I really am honored.
Oh, thank you. And we, the listeners, would love to hear your Reiki story. So I like finding out or hearing where it started in your life and what your feelings were when you met Reiki, and your Reiki story, how you progressed into where you are now.
Well, originally, this was years ago, I owned an organic dog biscuit company, and I met one of my best friends was taking an animal communication course and a Reiki class from a woman here locally in the area. Her name is Linda Wallen. She's an amazing practitioner. And my friend wanted to practice on me. And so I let her practice on me, and I was having a lot of issues with my ankles and legs. And after the first time she practiced on me, I was so amazed at how I felt. I had a lot less pain. I felt less stressed. And I said to her, I have to know this. I have to learn how to do this, you know. So I went to Linda Wallen, and I took my first class from her and practiced and did it on myself every day. She had me do a 21-day practice and meditation that I did and give myself self-treatment. And by the end of that time, I just knew, like, this was for me. I knew that it wasn't something that I could just do for myself. I could do it for other people, and it just grabbed me, you know. I just knew that this was the path I was supposed to be on. So I continued my classes with Linda. And then, and I had the dog biscuit company still at that time, and I would Reiki all the biscuits, and I would Reiki my recipes and my ovens, and I would just Reiki everything, my car, everything in my house has an attunement, you know. So I know, I love it.
That's a great story, dog biscuits. Huh? You were at Reikiing everything in your dog biscuit company.
Yeah, so I just Reikied everything, and then I kind of wanted to know more, and everyone in my area, I live in a small area, and everybody kind of learns from each other. So I went out of the area, and I learned from a woman in Sebastopol named Joy Medcalf, and she did a 1-2-3 review with me, and I learned a lot from her doing those reviews. And I can just continued with my practice. I started teaching, which I just love, doing. And then I met a woman named Joan Walsh who, studied with you, and she invited me to a class that she was teaching, and, it was really great. She asked me to come because she said, I heard that you, teach all the Japanese techniques and I said, I do, you know, and she said, well, I would love if you would come. And so finally I gave in and it was an amazing class. And so every once in a while I connect with Joan and we do a little work together or we visit or so. And now I'm just working. I have a private practice. I see a lot of veterans. I see addicts, and then I see general your everyday client that's looking for help to be balanced or some sort of healing in their life. And through the course of the time, I got my California state license to teach Reiki to nurses as continuing education. And as of right now, I'm working on my addictions counseling state license so that I can integrate that fully into my practice as well. And then I also do sound work as well. So,
mm-hmm. Wow, sounds like a busy practice.
Yeah. Actually, I'm very blessed. I have a lot of students. They help me do clinics. And
great.
Yeah, so it works well.
Great. So I'd like to just back up a little bit and get realizing to place you in a location and time frame. So you live in Southern California?
No, I live in Northern California in Humboldt County. I live 90 miles south of the Oregon border.
Wow. Oh.
Yeah, so I actually live in McKinleyville.
I see. Mm-hmm. And then what year was it that you met Reiki and had your feet and ankles Reiki'd?
I was introduced to Reiki in 2007.
Uh-huh.
So I'm relatively new to the practice, but have really studied hard.
Right. It sounds like it.
Yeah.
And when you say that you have a public, I will use this terminology. When you have a public practice, it means that you make appointments and see people on a regular basis, yes?
Absolutely, yes.
Uh-huh. And then you do teach.
I do teach. I teach, I usually do a couple groups a year, and then I do privates, a minimum, maybe 2-3 a month,
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm.
Great. So tell me, in your practice, I'm just really curious about the lessons you've learned in being a public practitioner of Reiki. Because I think that, the reason that I'm asking this is because for many students, Reiki becomes a sort of private thing. It's like they Reiki their family members and their friends and so on. Mm-hmm. But you've really stretched yourself already into going into what we would call the public. And that's why I call you a public practitioner. So I'm interested in sort of good lessons that you've learned through having a public practice.
I've learned so many, I think one of the most important things is to know, not to go beyond my scope of practice and know when I need to refer somebody for further, work. But,
excuse me, just a sec.
Yeah.
So I just would love to ask you about this because maybe some people don't know what that means beyond the scope of your practice. But it's a very important point. So could you, just explain that to us?
Yeah, absolutely. Because some of my clients are veterans and people with addiction issues, I have to make sure that if it's a counseling issue, that they get referred back to their counselor, that they're seeing their counselor regularly. Even a medical issue, if somebody's coming to me for a specific medical issue, I just check in with them, make sure they're seeing their doctor, and make sure that they understand, that I can't diagnose, that I'm not a medical doctor, that I'm not a counselor or a psychiatrist, those kinds of things. Just making sure that they are everything that they need to facilitate their healing that they have access to, and just reminding them to also access those other modalities.
Mm-hmm. Great. That's wonderfully clear. Thank you.
Yeah.
So that's a good point and a good thing to remember if you want to go into public practice. And I'm wondering about the rest of your points now.
Some of the other things I learned is that especially in, with working with students and doing a lot of clinics, I do 3 clinics a month. I do 2 for veterans and 1 for, I call it the general public, which means anybody can attend. And, you know, just making sure that we're just facilitating healing for their highest good, you know, keeping clear boundaries, you know, making sure that we're providing a safe environment. You know, the other thing that I think is really important is that as practitioners, it's good to remember whether it's business or family or healing or whatever it is, Reiki, I find or have found that it has been a tool to help me excel in every part of my life, not just physical healing, mental healing, emotional healing, spiritual healing. I found that it really has been able to help me bring balance in all aspects of my life, including my business, you know.
Uh-huh. Do you have does a story come to mind about that? Because that's really interesting.
Well, you know, I can think of some silly little stories like, you know, like manifesting something that, you know, is good for my practice. I've often, especially with the sound, part of my work, you know, there are instruments that sometimes I feel that I want to work with and I'll do Reiki to move things out of the way. So if that's for my highest good, it'll come. And I've manifested things like a piano in 4 days. At one point I was looking at this tank drum on the internet, and within 24 hours I had this drum on, I was sitting on my couch playing it, and it was funny. You know, my husband teases me about it all the time. So basically, you know, bringing the tools in, you know, that I use in my work. Reiki's really helped me with that. And again, it's always if it's something that's going to be for the highest good of my practice and my clients and myself, you know, so it's not like manifesting, I want a Ferrari, you know, so it's, you know, I haven't tried something like that, but it's not something I would, you know, I don't know.
Uh-huh. I'm interested to know if you can speak to this phrase, highest good, because, you know, a lot of people use it, and it means different things to different people. And I'm interested in your kind of cosmology around highest good.
Well, I think what's for our highest good isn't always what we think is best.
Uh-huh.
You know, it goes to that whole thing about how, you know, the energy, we can't manipulate things, you know, with the energy. What's going to happen is what's going to happen. But with the Reiki, what it does is it facilitates and helps whatever's going to happen either easier or, you know, not so, let me see if I can find the words. It just helps the person accept whatever it is, especially if it's going to be a difficult situation, in an easier way. And, you know, when we say what's for the person's highest good, it's like when someone comes to me and they want me to heal them, I have to explain to them, you know, that I'm not going to heal them. You know, I'm going to facilitate them in their own healing process. And, you know, I've had people come to me, you know, that have cancer, and, you know, we work towards the transition and helping them go effortlessly and with ease. And that's what's going to be for their highest good, not curing them or having the cancer go away. So I think when we think about the highest good, it's what is for the highest good of the person, the situation, all others involved, the highest good of all, you know, what it's supposed to be.
Uh-huh. So are you speaking of destiny?
You know, I guess so. You know, I hadn't thought of it like that, but I guess so, you know, and I guess each thing that we work on, I suppose we could look at it like there is a destination for whatever that is. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, interesting. Well, everybody has their own take on it, and it's just interesting to hear yours, because I think it informs some of the conversation that we'll have later. One of the things that I wondered is if you, if ever when I ask you to clarify something, I really love hearing personal stories. So I don't know if you feel comfortable about, if a personal story comes up, but that would be great, because I think it illustrates in a, in a less general way what you mean by, like, higher self, or is that possible to do,
Absolutely.
Is that too much?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. So do you have a story about something that happened for your highest good that wasn't predictable for you?
Well, you know, I could go back to, you know, the trouble that I was having with my legs. That was a personal, story that I learned a lot from.
Okay.
You know, I found that, you know, I wasn't listening to, what my path was supposed to be or is, and I wasn't listening to what was right for my body, and I was just kind of doing what I wanted. And so my body kind of took over, and I was wearing leg braces for a few years, and then I had to have both of my ankles reconstructed. And the funny thing was that I was just so resistant to, you know, doing what was, you know, right for me, even though I didn't consciously know what was right for me. You know, the Reiki, you know, this was when the Reiki started coming in, and I was using it all the time, and you know, it really helped me with the pain that I was having, and, you know, I had it with me always, so even in an instant, if I started feeling you know, uneasy or unbalanced, I could call the energy in to assist me. And what, you know, ended up happening was I did end up having the surgery, you know, which we weren't going to have. And because I feel that because of that, you know, because the Reiki was there to help me, I feel that maybe I wouldn't have done all that. And I'd probably still be, being stubborn, you know, and not sort of following my path. So,
right.
You know, I feel like I wasn't going to slow down and I wasn't going to listen. So my body made me and the Reiki helped me here.
Right.
You know, it helped me here and it also gave me, mobility back as well. You know,
wow, so. That's great. Wonderful. Yeah. Super. Nice story. I loved it that Reiki made me hear. It's like, it was about your legs, but it really was about your ears. And not your outer ears, but your inner ears.
That's right. I guess I had to slow down enough so that I could catch up to it. You know?
Great. Wonderful.
Yeah.
So the things that you've suggested about public practice have been really, really good. And I'm just wondering if there's another piece that you have to offer for public practice, because it's a growing thing all over the world. People wanting to go out, hang up a shingle, so to speak, and treat people whom they don't know and who might have really challenging conditions in their lives.
So I think, you know, depending on what the practitioner's goal is, you know, if they have a specific type of client that they want to you know, assist, then, you know, it's kind of funny and it sounds kind of strange, but you kind of have to treat it like a real business. You know, you have to figure out who the client, your client target is and how you're going to reach these people. You know, and you may need the assistance of Western practices. You may need the assistance of acupuncturists. You may need the assistance of herbalists. So it just kind of depends on, you know, how you want to get out there. You know, for me, we live in such a amazing community here in Humboldt County. We have so many healers and different types of healers, and everybody works together, and it's really beautiful and amazing. And so here it's very easy for us to, you know, connect with certain physicians and talk to them about, you know, offering services for their patients, acupuncturists, you know, just all types. So, I mean, really getting out there, you know, And you know, sometimes you have to start with the service. You know, sometimes you have to offer, you know, trials for people to try the Reiki so they can understand it. You want to be able to explain it to them in a way where they can understand it, you know.
So how do you explain Reiki so they understand it? Because that's been really a major question, I think, through the ages.
Well, for me, I try to explain energy to people. So what I say is that Reiki is based on the fact that everything vibrates at a specific vibration. Everything. Even man-made things, plastic, everything. And collectively, this creates this huge energy field. Not just here on our planet, but everything in the universe is part of this energy field. And science calls it biosphere, okay? Reiki is a specific frequency in that energy field. And what we do as practitioners is we tap into that specific frequency through the attunement process from passed on from master to student. We bring that energy in our body. We fill our whole body with it for our own self-protection. We focus our attention at the heart, asking the energy to flow through our hands, our eyes, our breath, however we're sending. And then we lay on hands, or hands are slightly above the body. And then I explain that the body works the same way. Every single organ in the body vibrates at a specific vibration. And when something is not in balance, that's how the practitioner knows where the treatment needs to be, because it will be vibrating at a different frequency than the rest of the body. And I also try to explain to them that our body is not just the physical. It expands out energetically, and we have different layers, and that's how we can work the mental, emotional, and spiritual levels as well. And that's sort of how I explain it. And for the most part, people seem to get it. You know, that's the best way I know how to explain it.
That's great. Thank you very much. That's very good. And so you don't find yourself at a loss for words in different populations. That's something that you would tell anybody.
No, absolutely. In fact, one of the local newspapers had me write an article on it for the Times Standard, and I had to write it in a way that somebody that had no idea what Reiki was or had any idea how to, you know, they just didn't know anything about it,
right.
You know. And so I sort of used that approach, and it seemed to work. I got a pretty good response. And, you know, honestly, if someone's still not getting it, I'll take the time, you know, I'll take the time and I'll explain it to them. And then sometimes if they're still not getting it, you know, I'll say, why don't you sit here and let me just work on you for 5 minutes and see how you feel, because maybe this is something you need to feel instead of hear about, you know. So and that's what I'm talking about. Like, give them the experience, give them the opportunity to have the open mind to accept something that's going to help them heal. And that's kind of what, you know, I think it's a way that it brings success, not just to the practitioner, but to those that are receiving, you know.
Well, that's great. I mean, I depend on my hands a lot more than sometimes I would like, but it's sometimes the only way for me, because I can't really explain Reiki.
Yeah. You know,
and what it is and what it might be for that person.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
exactly.
Good for you.
I strive.
Yeah, great. So let's see, where are we now? So, how did you come to treat veterans? Because this is something that I'm really interested in, because, the application of Reiki in this growing population of returning vets from, Afghanistan, Iraq, and the Middle East, in general, is starting to become almost a movement. It's not just a few hundred people. It's a lot of people that we're talking about, and I feel that Reiki has becoming really well known for this particular application, and I'm just wondering, how did you get into connecting with vets and so on?
Originally I had a couple of clients that were veterans in my private practice, in my public private practice.
Right.
And then I was approached by a couple of women that wanted to start doing clinics for the veterans. And so we sort of organized this this once a month clinic where we would treat combat veterans and military sexual trauma veterans. And that doesn't just mean women, that means men too. And now the two original women that started with me have no longer do it. They've kind of moved on to some other things. But so what I've done is I've brought my students in, and we work twice a month. We start at 11 and we finish at 3, and we do two tables at a time, and we see anywhere from 7 to 16 clients at each clinic. And I've been doing this about 4 years now. And that's kind of how it really got started. Originally, I was just seeing a few veterans in my private practice, and then once these women approached me, it just kind of, took off. We did a little research, and there is some common information out there about, the military doing some studies on alternative methods,
right.
And Reiki was one of those, and they did find in their study that it did help with PTSD, and it did help the immune system with the Hep C soldiers. We sort of kind of worked in that mode. You know, first we had to figure out even what PTSD was, you know, like what is it and what is it that we're going to be helping them with, so we can understand,
right, exactly.
You know, what it is. And, but I've really found that it really helps with the anxiety, the stress. Sometimes they report back that they're sleeping better. You know, I'll never forget the very first time one little guy said to me, and I think he's a World War II veteran, and he hopped off the table, and I was like, oh no, let's go off a little slower. He's like, no, I'm fine. And I just remember him putting his little finger out at me and saying, you don't have to believe in this stuff for it to work, do you? And I said, no, you don't. I don't even probably have to believe in it. I just have to do it. I said, he said, well, I'm going to tell you, I don't really believe in this stuff, but my hip didn't hurt for over a week last time. So I just thought that was cute, you know, and he comes back every month, and so, you know, they're open to it. So that goes back to that whole thing about sometimes the words aren't enough. They just need to experience it.
Right. Right. I agree.
So.
Super.
But, you know, we've had reports of, people sleeping better, you know, improvement of pain, headaches, you know. Improvement on headaches after a treatment. I'm trying to think. I remember one veteran saying to me, he started sobbing, and he said to me, you know, my whole life just changed in 10 minutes. And, you know, I remember it was the first time he ever came to a clinic, and he was 10 minutes late, and they only get 20, 25 minutes on the table. Usually there's two of us working on them. And, even in that short time, he said, I didn't know that somebody could touch you with such compassion and healing. You know, and he was just blown away by it. He said, my whole life, everything just like kind of went before me. I didn't know that could happen, you know. So it was amazing, you know.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
The touch of Reiki.
I know. It's so healing. And as I said, we do work also with military sexual trauma, and you know, having someone say to you after they have a session, you know, that they didn't realize that they weren't the sick one, you know.
Right.
They weren't the weak one. They weren't the sick one. They were just in the wrong place, the wrong time, you know. And it's just, those are the kinds of things that are just so rewarding, you know. And we've had PTSD for a long time, you know. In World War One, I think they called it shell shock.
Right.
At one time it was war neurosis. I think that was like the World War II stage. But I don't think it was until, and I could be wrong, until it was the 80s when they started calling it, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder. And I think that, you know, some of the guys that come, it really does help with the anxiety and the stress and the hypervigilance, you know. Sometimes, you know, they get on the table and they're just vibrating, you know. And within 10 minutes, they're almost snoring. And that to me is like success, you know.
Definitely. So. Well, there was this one beautiful story of this woman who was in a ward in a VA hospital somewhere. And this woman from Denver, this is in Denver, where they have Reiki in the VA hospital there.
Uh-huh.
Regularly, and the woman who was treating people came in, and she gave him like a half hour treatment or something, and then he fell asleep. And about an hour later, she kind of, you know, walked back through the ward, and this woman was just weeping and weeping, and her husband was still asleep, and she just said this was the first time that he had slept peacefully for more than 20 minutes in like 5 years.
Oh my goodness.
And she was just so grateful for this experience. And of course they continued on with the Reiki, and I think both of them eventually were initiated.
Wonderful.
Yeah, but it's just this wonderful thing about the power of human touch and this touch that we hold in our hands called Reiki. I have this idea that we're able to revisit a part of our ancestry, like our ancestral legacy that we've forgotten about.
Oh,
and that, you know, in the ancient days there was this way to touch that some people had as a gift, and some people, they just did it because that they knew that it was connecting in a different way.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you know, and I just feel that this is something that this practice form has brought us back to. And what a beautiful thing, because, you know, in my philosophy, war is in some way the actions of war that happen with the actual people who participate in war, not the guys in Washington, you know, moving soldiers around a map.
Right.
But the actual soldiers, that they are, they're like acting out a kind of, what should I say? Like the ultimate separation of two human beings can have. And in that ultimate separation, they have the capacity to actually harm or kill another person. And it doesn't matter what the reasons are, right? And that with Reiki, there's this ultimate connection that happens that we all feel. But to apply it to the situation just feels so, it's like the two ends of the spectrum coming together and making a circle. I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah, and I think too, it's very difficult, especially with, you know, the warriors, because they go into the military, whether they were drafted or they volunteer or they're recruited, no matter how they get there, you know, they go through these training, you know, and they completely are stripped away of who they are as a person and then rebuilt back up, because you're right. They do need to be able to kill someone, you know, they get in many situations where it's killed or be killed, or in situations where perhaps, you know, they are being ordered to do something that they morally don't agree with.
Right.
You know, and they have to do it for their own survival or the survival of their troops. And many come back, you know, with PTSD. Now there are some that don't, you know, not everyone in the military suffers from PTSD. Some do come back, you know, and they're able to readjust. You know, they have good support systems and counseling, and they get integrated back into the civilian world. And maybe, you know, it's not as difficult for them. But for many, you know, like you said, there's a big struggle there. And these types of therapies, especially Reiki, you know, it really does, it kind of brings them back into their soul, you know, it kind of reawakens that connection.
Right.
And sort of gives them their sense of self back, you know, but it does take a while. But to watch, I've watched many of them, you know, change and just, you know, sort of come back into themselves. And it's just, like you said, it's so beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful things I've seen. You know,
that's wonderful.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So I don't know what your background is. Were you some kind of a medical, like a nurse or a therapist or anything? Because you seem to have a good, you seem to have good language and so on. So I'm just wondering.
Well, I guess part of it is just, you know, being in the experience and kind of learning what it is that I'm dealing with. Cause I feel like if I don't, how am I going to help the client if I don't understand their issue? And then the other part of it is that I am also interning, you know, because of my drug and alcohol addictions counseling certification that I'm going for. So I have been doing some interning at the local vet center here as well. Uh-huh. So I've got to see both sides of it, you know, and I haven't been doing that as long. I've been doing the clinics for 4 years and I've only been interning, I think, for 8 months. So, but that's a whole nother side. I've worked in medical offices before, you know, mostly as an office manager. Physical therapy offices, but not, you know.
Right. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So, your idea is to work with the vets, not just with, post-traumatic stress disorder, but also through, another strategy that vets often go into, which is, drug and alcohol abuse.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because the addiction stuff, you know, I got interested in the addiction stuff because, you know, I have a food issue. And so I've really come to understand and realize that my food issue has some addiction components to it. And so, especially where I live, there's not really anybody here to help people with, you know, with food addictions. And so I really started thinking about it seriously, about integrating Reiki, sound, music, and art with addiction counseling. And so that's ultimately what my goal will be eventually. And the veteran population does have a large drug and alcohol addiction issue as well, because it's a coping skill, you know, yeah, it's a coping mechanism.
Exactly.
So the only problem is that it doesn't really work, you know, and so that's where it gets them in trouble. That's why offering something like Reiki, it's just such a, you know, it not only does it work, but it's something that even if they learn it, especially if they learn it, they have that coping skill with them always, you know. So, but The drug and alcohol, I do also see people with addiction issues. And most of the time when I see them, I do on-site visits, so I go to them.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Well, I have an office in my home, a private office, and then I also have a public office. But a lot of times I like to kind of, you know, your environment can provide you healing as well.
Yes.
So I like to see the environment that they're in, and I'm usually seeing them when they are abstaining.
Yes.
So, and usually they're with family members, and they feel more comfortable, you know, in that setting. They feel safe. So it's, you know, it's usually, you know, it's a good way to do it for now. And then once the trust, you know, they have to, you kind of have to build trust with a client like that, you know, so I want to see them a few times, get them used to me so they know who I am and the way I work and then, you know, seeing them in one of my other offices, you know, I think will be more appropriate, but it's best to, in the beginning, to do that on site kind of. And then they can show me like what they're doing. You know, they can show me the pictures they've been drawing. They can show me the 2 weeks ago, I had one of my clients, he's been recording music. And so he said, I want you to hear this, you know, so we went right to his stuff, and he played me the music, so it was really, you know, it was really good.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's a really good point, although it's a little bit unusual, I would say. And I like this part of you also, that for some people would find it kind of scary to do these things, but you seem to have a lot of good self-confidence that you can handle yourself and you won't be put into a compromise, like a physically compromised situation.
Well, I usually meet with the family first, and there's usually a family member there, so I'm not usually alone.
I see. Oh, that's
yeah,
really
so
good.
It's,
so all these different things are good, really good points. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely want to make sure that you're safe, but you know, and again, you know, when we talk about being in public practice, you know, everybody's target client is going to be different. I, you know, for some reason I'm attracted to, you know, these types of clients. And, but, you know, if, you know, there are many practitioners here, especially that, you know, they just work in their office and people come to them just for relaxation or, you know, mental, emotional healing. So they just come and they get their treatments. And I don't know why I do that, but I guess I just kind of push the envelope a little bit. I don't know. I get guided, you know, I just listen to what I get guided to do. And that's really the truth right there. You know, I just follow what I'm getting guided to do, you know.
Great. Well, it seems like you've got a good guidance system.
Yeah. Yeah. I trust them.
Uh-huh. So who's them?
Oh gosh. I work with a lot of guides. You know, I work with Kuan Yin. I work with, Archangel Michael. I work with, well, I always call the masters in, you know, I call yeah. in always when I work, Yasui, Shishido, Mrs. Takata, and all the masters before me. I always call in my healing guides and the healing guides of the person that I'm working on.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I don't worry about protection because I know that I'm fully protected with the Reiki. And, you know, I just, you know, you just, it's funny because when you first learn Reiki, you know, it's like a conscious thing where you're like, okay, you know, so I'm gonna call the energy in and I'm gonna, but what ends up happening is, you know, you begin to realize that you're a part of this energy and this energy is a part of you. And so there's just this constant flux of you and the energy, you know, and for me, it's just, I feel like I'm always in it. You know, I feel like I'm always in it. I'm always moving in it. It's moving in me and it's just, it's one, you know.
Beautifully said. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Well, for a lot of practitioners, that's something that we could work on, because I think that you don't have some of the worthiness issues that other people have, or a way of setting it apart from yourself. And I feel like that's really a key.
Yeah, and I mean, that, and when I say that I'm a part of it and it's a part of me, it sort of gives us the opportunity to realize that the Reiki, is doing all the work, you know?
Right.
And I love that. You know, I love that I don't have to work hard. You know, I love that I just have to be present there in the moment and just allow it to do the work.
Uh-huh. Right. And I'm just wondering, have you ever had a instance where you feel like you picked up on somebody else's stuff? Because there must be when you, well, anyway, let's just leave it at that.
Not with Reiki.
Uh-huh.
Not with Reiki. One of the things that with the Reiki does do is it enhances our other skills. And so I do sometimes get information when I'm working on clients,
right,
but
exactly.
I have the ability to turn that off. So what I do is before I start, and I teach my students to do this, especially in these clinics when we're working with, veterans and people with, illnesses.
Yes.
What I teach them to do and what I do is I ask that all information that they need to receive to please go to them, and for me just to facilitate healing in situations like that. Unless it's a private client and they want the information, then that's different. But even when I receive information, the feeling, when we talk about feeling and taking on people's stuff, it's more like an impression or like an intuitive feeling and not a physical feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I try not to hold on to it. In other words, once they go, I release that because it's not mine. And it's, I with Reiki, I've never had a problem with it, And I find too, even with teaching, when I have a student, they're like, oh, my wrist's starting to hurt because her wrist is hurting. And I'm like, you need to fill your body back up then. Just take a few deep breaths and just bring the energy in all the way. And then don't bring the energy back into your heart. Just refocus at the heart once. And usually it goes right away. So.
Interesting. Very
yeah.
Good.
I sort of have them bring it into every cell of their body before they, focus
uh-huh.
on the heart and run uh-huh. it down the arm. So,
wow. Great. Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's neat because, we get a lot of questions about that, like in big groups and stuff. There's always a person who really has issue with this. And the other thing is that a lot of people are kind of scared about the sensations people sometimes are afraid of the sensations that they feel in their body because they're new.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like they're caused by the other person. But I tell my students that it's your body responding to Reiki, and it's like another function of your body. So we're learning about how our body conducts itself as a channel for Reiki.
Well, yeah, and I mean, we have to remember that we're bringing that energy in, so it's working on us at the same time we're working on them. So we're receiving a treatment when we're giving a treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So we're definitely going to feel the benefits of that.
Uh-huh.
I like to remind them that, and this is my interpretation,
Okay. Disclaimer, that's good.
Yeah, to me, I feel like the Reiki, one of the reasons why you don't have to wipe and swipe with the Reiki, within a lot of energy modalities, the practitioner's wiping and smoothing and what, and with Reiki, we don't have to do that because Reiki dissipates the blocks. And, And so that's another way for me to explain to them that there can't really be transference, you know, because it's going to dissipate the block. Now, that doesn't mean the block won't move. It may move in the body, up and down the body, until the person's ready to release it. But once they're ready to release it, you know, it kind of dissipates. And that's just what I have found it to be. I don't know if that's correct or not, but.
That's great. And so I'm just wondering, in your experience, well, because when I had a veteran come and he was, this was in the early 1980s. So this was, post Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. And he had a lot of anger. And when he came to the Reiki class, he realized that this was releasing this anger. So it was really interesting because he had had Reiki before, and he had sort of figured out a strategy for this. So when he would get to the point where he felt like he couldn't control it anymore, he would just get up off the table and run. So during the class, it's really interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. So during the class, a couple of times he just said, I have to get up. I'll see you later. He just put on his shoes, went out the door and ran for like 15 minutes as hard as he could and then came back. And I found that to be, number one, really thoughtful. And number two, it was really neat to see that he was able to create a strategy that actually worked for him. And he said, you know, this is not about me being angry now. This is about the anger that I felt in the past coming up, and I just have to do something with it, because at the time I felt like I had to encase it, you know, like to keep it inside of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just loved his insight, and I also loved his way of working with that. And I'm wondering if in your work with the vets or, you know, anybody else, if you have had this come up too, because I think a lot of practitioners really are afraid of things like anger coming up or emotional states that they can't really handle, quote unquote.
You know, there's been a few times where I thought, because, you know, as a person starts to doze off, where I've thought, oh, wow, I hope they don't, like, come out of it and then all of a sudden be like, where am I, and start swinging, you know. But,
good thought.
Because that's a protective mechanism completely.
Right.
I haven't had a situation with anybody, you know, being that angry. Yes, they have anger issues, but usually if they're coming in for a treatment, I find that if they're feeling angry, they're just extremely tense and to the point almost where like they're making marks in their palms from their fingernails, you know, from the clenching, but usually we can get them relaxed, you know, pretty quickly. So I haven't had an issue with that, but I will say I find that a really good mechanism that he used, you know, just that his coping skill to just, you know, to let it out, you know, 15 minutes of running. You know, it's funny, exercise really is an important component because it does help us shed so much stress. You know, and so that can also help, you know, but the anxiety as well.
Right.
I think, you know, one of the things that the PTSD does is, you know, it really sets off the fight or flight mode, you know. And, you know, they get like the mind, the soul, and the body, you know, reaction. The body goes into a panic, you know, and that's why they get trouble sleeping, they get nightmares, you know, headaches, high blood pressure goes up because they're stressed and panicked. You know, in the mind, you know,
they get
the depression, the flashbacks, you know, nightmares, you know, those kinds of things. And then, you know, there's that soul thing too that we don't think about, you know, that component. And that's one of the things I love about the Reiki, because it works on all those levels, you know. So they feel a loss, you know, a loss of purpose. They feel a loss of connection, you know. their self-worth. Not all of them. I'm just speaking of a few. You know, I have to remember even myself, you know, that, like I said, you know, they're all in different stages, you know, and they all have different ways that they're handling, you know, their problems. And some of them, you know, when you talk about the Vietnam vets, you know, a lot of times the PTSD doesn't even show up until they hit retirement age. Because when they hit retirement age, now they're not working. Now their symptoms, one of the coping skills they were using before is they were a workaholic. Or they were, you know what I mean? So there were things in their life that were distracting them from the actual symptoms. Then they go into retirement, and now they're having all these symptoms.
Wow. You know? I never thought about that.
Yeah. I mean, there has been a very, very large, Vietnam population.
We're at the age now. I mean,
absolutely.
I wasn't a vet, but I'm definitely that age group.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, and the Reiki being able to help with that mind, body, and soul, you know, issues, all those issues is really, I mean, it's just so effective. You know, it's so effective.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for sharing all your experience and your knowledge that you've acquired over all these treatments that you've done. That's amazing.
Oh, well, thank you again for having me.
It's wonderful.
Lovely.
So I'm just wondering, to kind of get back to you, maybe, and mm-hmm. to your path of Reiki. I know that you said that you follow your own path and you go where you're guided. But I don't know if there is a dream or something that you have out there, a flash of a future moment that you're working toward. Do you have something like that in your life?
You know, I have a couple different pictures of things that I would, you know, like to be. One of them is I would love to just have a facility where we had constant clinics going all the time, you know, for people to come in and you know, receive healing, you know, for a lower cost. And then, you know, all those treatments could be provided, you know, by students and just have a learning facility. But then there's the other part of me that's like, well, I wouldn't mind having a building where I have a, you know, my work downstairs and an apartment upstairs. So I flip-flop back and forth, and part of that is my age. You know, I'm 53, and, you know, part of me, like, still wants to work really hard, and then the other part of me is like, well, I don't know. So, but I know one thing for sure. Is that I am definitely going to, you know, continue working with, you know, nurses and veterans and people that have addiction issues and, you know, anybody that I figure that, you know, if someone's guided to me, then I'm the right person to be working with them. And, you know, and teaching is a big part for me. You know, I just love teaching. I just love it, spreading that energy. And when I teach, you know, I help my students do their business cards, and I help them get brochures, and I help them if they want to start, you know, open up a practice. You know, I encourage them. You know, uh-huh. I help them do it. You know, because then they're helping more people. You know, so it's like,
right. And so.
But, yeah, I mean, I guess I have several pictures in my head.
Right. Sounds good. Well, I just want to say thank you for your contribution to what is often called the Wounded Warrior Program here in the United States. And I feel that it's a really wonderful thing that you're doing out there and creating a kind of field of energy for them to step into and start feeling safe again.
Yeah, you know, and it really is, like, I'm honored to be able to do that for them. So. Right.
Wonderful. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.